Welcome back.
Tonight, I can report to the American people and to the world that the United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of al-Qaeda.
President Barack Obama on May 1st, after Navy SEALs descended on that compound in Pakistan and ended the decade-long hunt for bin Laden. Much has been said about how the mission came about, the courier who was tracked by cell phone. But we're now hearing how Navy SEALs gathered two women trying to shield bin Laden in a bear hug to move them away as he was shot. We're hearing from jewelry merchants who bought the family's gold as they became desperate for cash. Peter Bergen, who produced the first TV interview with bin Laden back in 1997, now hosts a new film on the National Geographic Channel that airs this Sunday that chronicles bin Laden's demise. And Peter Bergen joins us from the Christian Science Monitor studios in Washington. Peter, welcome back to Here and Now.
Thank you, Robin. Thanks for the invitation.
And you paint a picture in the film. You go to Pakistan. You go to the compound. You meet the people who were the merchants his family came in contact with. And you use recreation to sort of recreate what it felt like in that compound. Tell us about that. What did it feel like when bin Laden was living there?
They weren't living large. I mean, Robin, as you point out, we talked to some jewelers who were buying jewelry from the bodyguards that were protecting bin Laden. And we know for a fact that they were living in a fair degree of abject poverty. Basically, they were growing pretty much everything they were eating. They were raising chickens. Bin Laden himself was surrounded by his kids and his family, which was an indicator the CIA thought that they might have the right man, because bin Laden over time has historically been with his family and kids. And the fact that he had three wives and at least a dozen kids, grandkids in the compound was one of the indicators that led them to believe that maybe this was bin Laden.
But as you say, living not exactly the high life, let's listen to your visit to the jewelry shop in Rawalpindi, in which you meet the merchant who showed you the items that he said came from that compound, came from the bin Laden family.
It was like this old ornament.
Old one, and they were exchanging for new gold and some cash.
We call it jewelry. He gave them these baby rings.
This is a baby ring.
हमसे जो jewelry लेके गए हैं, उसमें वो पुराना gold हमें देके गए हैं, और plus 20,000 के करीब उन्होंने हमें cash दिया.
Okay, so they sold old ornaments. The transaction was around $2,000.
So just a sense, as we said, of you know how people in Pakistan might have been interacting with maybe not bin Laden, but people in his inner circle in that compound. And you remind us, there was such tension in the White House because no one was really sure that was where bin Laden was. Yes, they tracked the courier in the Suzuki van to the compound. But one of the indications that they had that this was the place was that it was a black spot?
This is a house that was, you know, probably worth of several hundred thousand dollars, and it didn't have internet service or phone service. I mean, that was kind of indicative of the fact that bin Laden was, or whoever was in there, was taking very careful account of American surveillance capabilities. In fact, one of the things we say in the show is that bin Laden would take a sort of a walk in this little vegetable garden on occasion to get out of the house. But he did so under a tarpaulin because even though he didn't know that the United States was sending satellites over his compound, he wasn't taking any chances that they might. And so there was never a shot of bin Laden. You know, and that's why, you know, President Obama's decision to do the raid is really one of the more gutsy decisions that a president has taken, because the case was entirely circumstantial that he was there.
All they had was these shadowy satellite photos of someone they called the pacer, pacing back and forth. Well, as you said, President Obama eventually does order the mission, even though many in the war room, I guess you'd call it, with him did not want to go ahead, and even though CIA Director Leon Panetta tells him there's only a 60% chance bin Laden is really there. And the president chose the mission that he did because he felt if they were going to do anything, there had to be some proof. There had to be American boots on the ground to try to retrieve a body, if there was one. And you take us through that moment. We've all seen the now iconic photograph of all of President Obama's closest advisors clustered around screens watching what was actually going on, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton with her hand to her face. And you recreate what happened in that compound. There were two helicopters bringing the Navy SEALs, and one of them crashes almost immediately and breaks off and falls inside the compound. And in your recreation, you show this breathtaking moment where no one's sure if the SEALs on board that copter die, but then you see them through these satellite photographs coming out of the helicopter.
Right. We don't know exactly when that iconic photograph was taken, but I think it was in the context of real concern that the mission was in serious jeopardy. Now, if the helicopter pilot hadn't been very, very quick to crash land the helicopter in such a way that it didn't kill or injure people on board, you know, we could have been in a different situation. I mean, if, you know, a dozen SEALs on that helicopter flight were either seriously injured or even killed, you know, the plan would have been in very, very, very bad shape suddenly.
Well, and we all know how the story ended. But here you are, meeting the people who lived in the neighborhood, meeting reporters, meeting people who heard the noise of that night. What's the biggest thing that surprised you after all we've heard about what happened? What surprised you?
Well, I mean, one thing that was surprising to me is we interviewed the architect who built the compound. And at the end of the interview, he said that he didn't think bin Laden lived there.
Do you believe him?
It's a kind of very curious form of denial. Here's the guy whose firm built the building, but he couldn't allow himself to believe that bin Laden was living in the same city where he was running his architecture practice. And that was a pretty common response, and I'm not quite sure what that means, but denial is a not uncommon form of dealing with an uncomfortable truth. You know, the fact that bin Laden was living there for 6 years is something that I think a lot of people in that city still don't really accept.
And what about for you personally? It's sort of coming full circle for you. You were the person who met him over a decade ago. And in fact, it was in your interview that he first declared war on America. This was, of course, long before 9/11. And here you're visiting the place where he died.
You know, the history of manhunts is replete with examples of people not being found or people taking a very long time to be found. And so, of course, I was surprised as anybody else when I got the call that Sunday evening that bin Laden had been killed.
Yeah. And the reaction on the part of the Pakistanis that you met to the fact that the U.S. was able to come in and over the course of what, not even, you know, under half an hour, land two helicopters, kill Osama bin Laden and others in that compound and then leave?
Well, there was a lot of negativity to the fact that we didn't give Pakistani leadership a heads up. There was also a lot of disturbing feelings amongst the Pakistanis, as you say, Robin, that we were able to do this and there's implications about their nuclear facilities and how easy it would be for the United States maybe to seize their nuclear weapons, which is something that they tend to have a big concern about.
Well, Jeffrey Goldberg writes about that in The Atlantic, that, you know, the Pakistanis actually dispersed their nuclear weapons around the country in civilian vehicles after the attack on the compound, you know, realizing, well, they could, U.S. forces could get in and out that easily.
Right. And even though we did get quite a lot of good access and cooperation on the Pakistani side, at the end of the day, it's a story which I think they would prefer if it just sort of dematerialized.
Peter Bergen, host of The Last Days of Osama bin Laden, it premieres on the National Geographic Channel Sunday night. Peter, thanks as always.
Robin, thank you.
Take a break. When we come back, the 28-year-old classical guitar sensation, Milos, here and now.